Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Who are you again?
Anthony McCarthy.
Should I even get these mics working the way? Now, try that again.
We're going to do that one more. There we are. And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
I figured you were the first two times. Just make sure everybody else knew you were here, too.
I began to doubt myself.
Before we jump in, I have to remind you all the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, the number is 1-800-492-5538, the University of Maryland Hospital for Children. So let me go back to where I began when we started this conversation. This conversation has come up a couple of times. We started to do it the last time Lester was on the show. Dr. Lester Spence, that means he's in the house. The conversation was going to be about race and cultural institutions in Baltimore. And for as long as I can remember, it seems like we have a very divided city on many levels. And part of that is around our cultural institutions. Now, we know Kwame Kwe Arma is now head of one of our largest institutions, Center Stage, and one of the things he has said is he's dedicated to is making theater available to everyone, bringing working class people to the theater and people of color to the theater. When you go to the theater, you see, and if it's a play that's written by a black playwright or has something to do with a black role, the audience is full of black folks. But if it's not, then it isn't. And the same thing with the symphony mm-hmm. and other places. The question is, who defines what culture is in this town? Is it defined by the people that came the other day, and saw, not the day, a few months back, after a show talking about the Station Arts North, I thought it was called, right? Station mm-hmm. Arts North. And so the question was, people wrestling with in Station Arts North, one of the things they said, how do we keep Station Arts North from being an all-white artistic enclave in a city like Baltimore? And that's a real question. The West Side Center being brought up, that's going to be anchored by large theaters. And what is going to make that an interracial artistic place? Is that what we want? And then finally, let me just say that a show we did last week with the about the Afro-American Archives, which, by the way, folks, if you haven't seen them, you need to go to Afro-American.com and just see the archives there. From the amazing wealth of information. At any rate, the Lewis Museum is putting on an exhibit, so they were in the studio. Skip Saunders, who's the new head of the museum, who I've known for years, said on this program when we were talking about it, he said, well, you know, yeah, we are our sister institutions, the Blacks and Wax Museum and the Douglas Myers Museum in Fells Point, are working together on many things. Well, those are black institutions who get less money than the other institutions that are working to create this. And so is that divide exist? And you have a few places that really try and attempt to integrate the scene in Baltimore, like the Creative Alliance. It's been around for a long time, but it's really very separate. So we are joined here today by Dr. Lester Spence, associate professor, associate now, right?
Yeah, as of July 1. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. He'll be staying with us at the tenured professor now at Johns Hopkins University of Political Science and Africana Studies and Stare in the Darkness, Limits of Hip Hop and Black Politics is his first book. He's working on another one now. We're also joined by Dr. Leslie King Hammond, founding director of the Center for Race and Culture at MICA, where she was vice president for academic affairs.
Graduate dean.
As I said, the graduate dean.
Graduate dean.
Dean
of graduate studies.
Sorry, graduate studies. And Margaret Footner, who is co-founder of the Creative Alliance. It's been how many years now?
17 years.
Wow.
That began in the second floor. Of an art gallery in Fells Point 17 years ago, and now is this major institution on Patterson, at the Patterson and the East Side. So 410-319-8888. So who defines culture in this city? Who makes decision? How do we do that here? I know it's not cut and dry. There's some czar, but Leslie?
I'm a transplant. So I came from New York, and I grew up in a city where, you know, it was supposed to be the melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
And I come to this city to go to grad school at Hopkins, and I find a kind of mirror reflection, a mini mirror, of what New York was like. And for me, always, from the nature of my experience and my growing up, for me, art and culture come from the community. They come from the people. The difficulty is that while the people and the culture of the community are always very busy, it's the institutions, depending on the type of institutions, that have difficulty recognizing the important contribution that these communities or individuals or little enclaves or little fiefdoms play in the character of a whole city or a society. And part of that is due to our class structure, our race structure, our political structure, our structure of access to resources and information. And then the media, no disparagement to, you know, a Mark Steiner show, because we get to really talk about this. The media then moves in to pick up what they believe they can spin, and they allow the public to believe that they really know what is determining culture. When we in the trenches, I often call myself a trench worker. You know, I got a lot of titles, and I have a lot of accolades and achievements and awards, and I'm very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
But I see myself as a worker in the community, because that's where I came from and that's what I believe in. I believe it comes from bottom up, not top down. And with that, I think that we have other people here who can really illuminate what that conundrum is. And it is a conundrum. Because the question then becomes, who gets the attention, who gets the funding, who gets the spotlight, who gets the opportunity to shine, mm-hmm. and who gets left in the shadows, mm-hmm. you know? And the people sitting here, I call us shadow warriors, all right? Because we're nuts. We just really believe in what we do. We love what we do. They call us crazy because we just don't give up. We're relentless. We believe in what we know to be true.
Well, before I ask you this question, let me have to go around with it. Margaret.
I'm so glad Leslie's here, because she's so articulate, and I completely agree that culture is in our communities, and our job is to find it and to showcase it. And it's a very exciting job to have. So that's what we believe in at the Creative Alliance. That's kind of what we're here to do as presenters in our galleries, in our performance space, as in our screenings, is to find out what is going on in this multicultural town that we live in, and do our best to find it and showcase it and put a light on it and get people here to our, you know, to gather people to enjoy it. Because it's a lot, there's a lot there, and it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, not always fun. Sometimes we're dealing with really tough issues, but there's so much reward, so much learning, so much to be gained.
So Dr. Detroit is the newest man in Baltimore. What do you think?
Dr. Detroit, I'll take that too. I think what Dr. Hammond said about the character of a city is really important, right? So our culture helps shape who we are, and in some ways it helps shift the conversation about who we're supposed to be. And given cities like Baltimore and Detroit are changing so much, we really need that cultural component. Is really important as far as getting it right, making sure that as many different aspects of the cultural mosaic that is Baltimore, that is Detroit, is represented. Getting that right is really important, because we're not going to be able to fully develop the capacity of our citizens, but we're not going to fully develop our capacity as a city unless we really figure that out. That's why this conversation. So there may be some listeners who are like, I don't really see why culture is important, or even maybe why I don't see why you might have a political scientist on the show. It's about culture. I would say it's important because you're not going to – we can't figure out any of these questions. You guys talked about casinos last hour. You can't figure out any of these questions, these moral or ethical questions or these political or economic questions without wrestling with culture or without having culture workers have some say in that.
So – I'm sorry. Let's get these headphones working right. did you want to jump in or anything?
I just wanted to ask a very quick question because I know these three individuals. I admire these three individuals, and I know where their commitment, and it's in as much as it's culture and their commitment to their institutions, it's also, as Dr. Spence said, it's a commitment to humanity and to our city. But oftentimes I get curious about where that commitment to culture and our city collides with the reality of your institutions. I go to the Patterson all the time, the Creative Alliance, because they outreach and there are shows there that I'm interested in. But oftentimes I can see the frustration on the faces of my friends at the Creative Alliance because they will have a show. They want to bring a diverse audience in. They want to have a dialogue following with as many different voices. But oftentimes the reality is you don't get the number of whites you want there. You won't get the number of blacks you want there. You won't get the number of Latinos involved in the conversation. And I guess I'm going to ask the ugly question about when does it become frustrating, this idea of culture, when you run up against people who just don't buy in?
It's frustrating all the time.
Okay.
It never stops being frustrating. Even when we get a moment, you understand? When all of a sudden there might be an epiphany, an awakening, or we have a show where we think we're going to have the hardest time attracting an audience, they show up. We're trying to figure out and dissect, to do the study, what happened? How do we crunch the numbers? What do we do? What do we not do? What was it word of mouth? So it is always a frustrating task. And the reality of that is that we live in a society, and I'm so glad you're here, because the politics of this are so crucial, where we are culturally conditioned to think that we should not have interests beyond the borders of where we were born, where we were raised, where we were conditioned to think that it was appropriate or sanctioned for us to be part of. Part of my difficulty in coming into a community I wasn't born in was that because I'm not a native, people accept my difference as the standard because she's not from here, so she wasn't properly trained. You know, so it's okay if she just sort of acts up a little bit. She just wasn't here long enough or early enough or went to the right schools. Because you know how they ask you what schools you go to?
That's right.
And then when I tell them I went to Hopkins, they go, oh.
Yeah.
Like, how did that happen? It's like, oops. You know, like, where was the, what's the disjuncture here? So, and this is, I don't care if it's Detroit, I don't care if it's New York, I don't care if it's Jacksonville, Florida, or I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was a phenomenal experience in culture, all right? And I don't care where you are. If you're in America, this is the standard, this is the condition, these are the criteria that we have to accept as cultural activists, as cultural workers, as trench workers. Every event, no matter what institution you're at, whether you are the bestowed high on high to the little corner, you know, after school program, the problems remain the same. And it goes back to the politics of how America was constructed.
So, but how do you, in some senses, deconstructing where we are now. I mean, one of the things is that the folks who called in, you can call back or get right to the phones at 410-319-8888. I think someone had a critique of WEA. We'd love to hear it. 410-319-8888. Join us here with your thoughts. I mean, do you go to the theater? Do you go to art openings? Do you go to films anymore? Do you go to any of these things that happen around us? Are they alien? Are they different? Are they for some other than us?
Mm-hmm. Well, so one thing I like to play with is that we've got this implicitly this conception of culture as being high, right? So the culture is the theater. It's an art show. It's a gallery. Whereas I'm getting culture when I go to bang the house music
at the
Skyloft Gallery like once every few Saturdays, right? So part of my challenge, to the extent we just talk about this within black communities, is to get black communities to appreciate that there's a range of cultural practices that are already exist and are legitimate and can be used for a variety of purposes, whether it's house music, whether it's club music, kind of your Baltimore variant, whether it's hip-hop, whether it is photography or jazz or what we conceive of as, quote-unquote, the high arts. It's all valuable. That's the thing that I'm trying to work on. That's one of the things I imagine I'll be working on as while I'm here.
And enrichment. I think that the things that Dr. Spence just laid out for me, oftentimes I get frustrated because I have in my head, in culture, coming from the country to the big city, have always defined culture the way he initially defined it, as being an appreciating theater and the arts, and then have people in Baltimore break it down and take me to a spoken word in a little tiny room in the back of a club where I am enriched by the passion and the experience and know that they are still making social commentary about our culture and our institutions, our happiness and our joy and our sadness and our anger. Culture in this city and every city, I think, is a deeper definition than we've been cultured to believe it is.
Yes,
well, it's the expression of our humanness and in various forms according to the, you know, for lack of a better word, or maybe it is the word, tribe that you're from. And you know, these, what Leslie was talking about in terms of that we do come from these tribes, and we need them. We need our families. We need our communities. They, you know, it's how we survive in this world. So how do we look at the various expressions that all these that these various communities have? And share them, because that's how we get to see what makes us different. And there are some profound differences, but it also is how we get to see what's common.
It's this, there are a bunch of issues here that we've all raised. I think that the high and low question that Lester just brought up, and the idea of sharing, and how is it even possible? Does it work in any form anywhere at the moment? Does that happen? Do people want that?
Let me take it to an even more, I think, critical point of reference. When we look at how culture begins, and when I said it comes from the bottom up, so that means family, that means church, synagogue, temple, that means you can be religious, you can be a-religious, you don't have to really be specific to any one group. It's everywhere, depending on how you want to engage it. The thing that I find very difficult is that when we look at our school system, let's go to our K through 12, and we go into our educational systems, we will find that in the arena of those centers, those emporiums of knowledge, we are consistently seeing year after year the diminishing of arts and culture in the curriculum.
Yeah.
If this continues, the problems that we're talking about as we started off this hour, are only going to become even more crisis-oriented, more critical, and more tragic, because not only are we not engaging new populations to come in and to be a part of this, we're also losing the talent, the possibility of inspiring young people who are the next generation to help us define and make a way for us in this very complex world. So if we're not dealing with it at its root base, which is in the educational systems, and finding a way to inspire children to want to be in the theater, to want to see theater, to be a techie in the theater, okay?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there are so many different roles. We have one magnet high school, and that ought to tell you something, the competition to get in there. What it's like.
2,000 kids trying for just
exactly. That is an atrocity. We should have 10 in the city.
All right, let's raise a lot of issues here. Let me go to the phones, get a call in here and come back. Look, I want to kind of parse through them all. 410-319-8888. Hank, you're on the air.
How you doing today, Mr. Steiner?
Good, Hank. How are you, man?
How you doing today, Mr. McCall?
Brother Hank, great to hear from you.
It's great to hear from you, gentlemen. I believe that if our school system just supplied half of the money that they wanted to take from all of this gambling, right, and opened up the art program and the music program to our kids, like we had back in the day, there'd be more kids acceptable to art and the theater, right? I mean, my mother taught ballet. My mother took up photography. Right? I tell you this, I've had culture. So I know what it is to go see Johnny and the Appleseed as a 7 and 8 year old and say, "Ooh, mom, let's go plant an appleseed outside." Right? If you're not teaching them this at that young age, if you're not during the summer when they're not in school having some kind of little art program for them, then they don't care what art is. They see it on TV. Oh, opera. Yeah, that's a white person thing. I ain't going to no opera. Right? When in all actuality, well, opera is spoken in Italian. Right? And I'm just saying, give our kids a chance. Right? I run around with my cameras. I got pianos in my house. I have guitars in my house. Right? My grandkids are 5 and 6 years old. And I give this to them so that they can experience the same thing that I experienced. That's all I'm saying is give them a chance. Don't close them in.
Hank, thank you so much. Always appreciate you when you call.
Absolutely.
We have to take a break. We're going to jump back right into this. We'll come back from this break and pick up on the pieces we just left around here in this conversation and try to pull them together if we can on some levels here. 410-319-8888. Culture in a city, who defines it, how do we grow it, and just what are we growing? Stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Go ahead, Anthony.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And,
that's cute.
We are here today with Dr. Lester Spence, Associate Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Johns Hopkins University. And his book still is out there, Stand the Darkness, Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. Dr. Leslie King Hammond, founding director of the Center for Race and Culture at MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art, where she was for many years the Dean of Graduate Studies.
Thank you.
Margaret Footner, co-founder of the Creative Alliance. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So I'm curious, the listeners out there, many of you may have gone to school for the arts. I'd like you to join us. We'll talk about the arts in your life. So what I said to here, what we said during the break was, you take the Baltimore School for the Arts. And I love the School for the Arts. I taught there for 10 years in the theater department. It was a great experience and an amazing place to be for the students. It has a huge endowment. It raises a lot of money. It was started as a very elite institution, but the students come from across the city. I mean, you have kids from the poorest neighborhoods in Baltimore City to the wealthiest kids in town to go to that school, and they mix together. And the majority of the kids are from working class and poor homes from Baltimore City. And it's a real mixture of kids class-wise and race, Asian, Latino, black, and white. So I don't know if that, A, can be replicated, to be want to replicate it, but what you do have is a couple of thousand young people trying to get in there every year for 125 openings. I think they were in the theater department. I think they let in maybe, I'm not the exact number, 10 kids, 12 kids. I think in my ensemble when I taught, there were like 12 or 15 kids in my ensemble every year when I taught the sophomores. So it's a very limited, small space. So can that change? Should it change? Every kid doesn't want to be in the arts. Kids want to do many things, but so I mean, let's talk about what we give our kids and what's limited. And is that part of the change? And how do we even begin a conversation with our communities and city and government to make that change?
Well, you know, your earlier segment was talking about these opportunities that could come from the fringe or residual benefits from gambling. We have to have a kind of a concerted effort, a movement of people who consistently and regularly demand that these funds be poured back into our educational institutions, because I believe firmly that if we don't do that, it's not going to happen. We are going to have this relentless battle. I also look at something else I thought about during the break, and that was the incredible response every summer to the city's Artscape.
Yeah.
Incredible response. Now, if you look at the cross-section, the demographics, the range of people there, all right, rain or shine, it is one of the best feel-good, freest, large arts festivals. Now, some people have called it Foodscape, whatever. The people come out to participate. They actually go to every exhibition. If you stand in any of the exhibition spots, you listen to everyday people having conversations about the art.
Yeah.
I don't like it. What is it? Wow. Can I go back? Go get my mother. I got to show her this. The idea is that the interactiveness is there. And there's something about the accessibility of it, the mm-hmm. fact that it's free, that it's open, that there is no stigma attached to you walking around looking at sculpture in the event that maybe somebody in your community or family or friends or network may not feel that going to see culture is a worthy thing to do. But going to an Artscape event is acceptable.
And last year at this time, we were doing programs with the Roots Festival that was happening on the west
yes.
side of town.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In
yeah.
a working class African American community.
Yeah.
That
yes.
brought didn't you didn't have to go downtown. It was we this create a festival somewhere else.
Yeah. That's yeah. right.
And that had it was a huge success.
Yeah.
That's right.
Chuck Brown.
That's right. And see, and I think it's about getting the communities to continually do that. It shouldn't be just the Artscape. This is a city of neighborhoods. That's why I like this city. Okay, it's got this funky bun, this kind of edge. And each community has something culturally to offer.
So, go ahead.
So I was thinking about
Mr. Spence.
And a number of the communities have cultural institutions. Even you're just talking about, was it 901 Arts? Didn't we drive by 901 Arts on the way? Mm-hmm. I think Sarah Tooley runs that joint. I mean, there are all these little spaces mm-hmm. where people are creating culture, right? Again, the stuff is already happening, right? The question is how do we create the resources that give them the ability, the culture workers, the ability to do a lot more than what they're doing? Because when you think about really what we're doing with the resources we have is tremendous,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Given how resource poor the artistic community in Baltimore is, yes. right? And some of them poorer than others. What we're doing here is tremendous. It's about actually coming together and figuring out how do we really push the political powers that be to raise more money for our work.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. How do you define culture in this community? What defines it? Who should define it? What is happening in your own community? I mean, we just talked about the across town, there are all kinds of small studios popping up everywhere. 410-319-8888. Darren in Columbia, you're on the air. Darren, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Hi, Darren. Welcome.
Welcome. Well, thank you. Let me say my first critique is here we are celebrating and commemorating quintessential transcontinental mega superstar Michael Jackson all over the world. And here on the campus of Morgan State University on Black Radio, there's no mention of him. You know, I think that if other institutions, white institutions like Berkeley would say we're going to have Michael Jackson 101, then Black institutions would do the same. I think we got to start with celebrating our own culture. And oftentimes we throw our artists and culture away and pick up others. So we got to have a strong love for our own culture, first and foremost. Number two, culture and art are tied to movements. I was at a culture event last night with Dick Gregory and very little.
Dick Gregory and who, man? You're breaking up. Dick Gregory and who?
I think we lost him.
Hey, Darren, I think it's your cell phone, man. We heard the last thing you said was Dick Gregory and somebody else. Call back, man. We'll get you right back on to finish what you were saying. But let's pick up on what we did hear Darren say.
Well, I think that one of the things I appreciate what Darren said about celebrating our own culture, I think that's key. And I think that there is a political movement component to that that has to be driven, that has to be awakened and kept alive. But I also recognize that my culture is so diverse, my experience is so diverse, that I want to constantly be about experiencing other things. Not just celebrating mine, because that's important. That's key, as he said. That's one of the foundations. But really learning to appreciate Celtic dance, or really going into a little art space that's just one room over in Bolton Hill, but it has about 12 pieces of art around the room that is in a genre that I've just never appreciated or experienced. And I think exposing young people to that and exposing your social group to that really enriches you wherever you are and wherever you come from. I was in a church. I was invited to come. This pastor invited me to come in his basement. He has his youth group doing Shakespeare. And these kids, ranging from the age 6 and 7 up to teenagers, doing Shakespeare in such classic, incredible hood and hip-hop way was a new experience, and I was blogging about it and writing about it. Mm-hmm. I think that Baltimore, as Dr. Spence said, what we're doing with what we have is incredible. Mm-hmm. But boy, could you imagine if it was a priority that arts was a priority for our spending or for our political decision makers?
Well, let me pick up on something, at least a piece of what I think I heard Darren talking about, mm-hmm. and throw it out here. One of the things that when I say who define and what defines culture, mm-hmm. is culture defined in the city more by European heritage or African heritage? When it comes to what we celebrate, what we accept as art, what we accept as what's in our museums, when I saw Brothers Size, Everyman Theater, which I thought was the best plays they've had ever at Everyman. A lot of folks were walking out, especially older white folks were walking out of the theater because they couldn't handle Brothers' Eyes, which I saw 4 times. It was just a mind-blowing play. But let's talk about how we define it. I mean, I think part of what we're seeing, I think part of what Darren is saying when he's saying our culture is that African culture, African-American culture is not celebrated at the same level as European culture in this community. Let's wrestle with that.
I think he's absolutely correct. And I think we have to go back historically and look at the landscape of how America was constructed. And one of the things that was not ever celebrated from the very moment was anything that had to do with the cultural, aesthetic, religious attributes that came from an African-centered belief systems, practices, ways, mores. The African sensibilities and African philosophies and histories and heritages and cultures have had to been fought for relentlessly in a way to establish not just a presence in mainstream institutions, but a parity where it is just a different way of expressing oneself. So, yes, it has been Western-driven and is still Western-driven and is still a major battle, even on the best boards in the greatest museums, because they're still trying to wrap their heads around what this means at the same time that we are becoming a Latino. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have new populations mm-hmm. of Africans moving in who are not of the African sensibility. So now you have an African diasporic sensibility. You understand that sweeps that comes up from the Caribbean, that comes up from South America. So we have been inundated with Western sensibilities. And even as I teach at the Maryland Institute at MICA, I will often ask my students when they come into my class what they want to know. And the white students are very open and they say, look, I'm full up with this Western stuff. I don't know anything else. I need to know something else because that's not the world I live in. And I need to be ready to interact with the world that is before me, that when I step beyond the doors of this college, and this is for any student, this could be Morgan, this could be Micah, this could be Coppin, this could be University of Maryland. When I step beyond the doors of these, you know, serious institutions, am I going to be ready to handle the world, the community that I must find a way to interact with? And that's their concern. And it's a real concern for them. Mm-hmm. So they're asking also of the institution, if you want me to be a leader, if you want me to be a leader, a world leader, are you training me to be able to embrace, to engage those communities that are different from me? So I am going to step out. These students are saying, I'm going to step out and take things that are the opposite from what I've grown up in, what I've experienced, what I know, because I need to be ready.
That's a, I mean, let me, should we get the phone unless you guys want to jump in with this thought behind Leslie?
Phone.
410-319-8888. So I think we should, let's go back to Darren, who's called back in. Darren, let's see if you have cell reception, let you finish your thought this time.
Yeah, well, I was saying I was at a cultural event last night with Dick Gregory and Paul Mooney.
Paul Mooney, okay,
oh, wow.
Gotcha.
Oh, wow.
That must have been old school.
Oh, yeah, but see, they come out of a movement. Movements produce artists. Artists don't produce movement. And I think that's what's important that we have to remember. We have to have a movement, and there's no sustainable, containable movement taking place in this country right now. There's been some semblance of movements, but no movements, and that's why many people will come out and hear Dick Gregory and Paul Mooney, Black, Brown, Red, Yellow, and White, because they've been historically tied to movements, and artists, again, come out of movements. And until we have movements, then we'll never really produce art that really elevates not just Black people, but all of humanity in this city and in this state. But we can't have a European art superimposed with Blackface on it. And unfortunately, many of the institutions, this is what we see taking place. There have to be a love for your culture first and foremost, not superimposing European culture with a Blackface on it. But we have to have a love for our own culture, and our movement first and foremost, and then we can unite with others. But it starts with us having a movement within our own communities and then linking them up. There has to be some mortar, as we saw in the greatest movement since the movement of Jesus Christ, the Civil Rights Movement. There has to be mortar that can connect the people together. But until we have that, then we never really have real art. We have art, unfortunately, as being suppressed because it's not being defined from a European perspective.
Darren, thank you. Thank you so much. Lester.
I understand where it's coming from. I disagree in a couple of different ways. I would tweak that in a couple of different ways. One, I'd modify it to say that unless you have kind of what a movement does, it can institutionalize a certain type of art. But there is no point in Black history, as I understand it, where you've got art. At every point in Black history, as I understand it, up to the present moment, you've got artists who are creating affirming work using the best of their culture in every moment, right? So right now, I mentioned house music earlier. You've got some of the best house music DJs, and I consider that a form of art. And there is no movement attached to them because they're all the product of the Reagan era where the movement dies. But if you were to go there and see the stuff, see them at their craft and to see the feelings they're evoking from the people who are dancing to them, you would think that you were in, I don't even have the words to describe it. And very rarely am I at a loss for words on this show. Right. So what I'd say, we do have a challenge about institutionalizing this thing. And that's one of the questions that I thought about when Mark talked about the show idea and institutionalizing this thing. But we've got art for days. We've got political art for days, affirming art for days. It's about how do we take that and then either connect that to something or not necessarily build a movement out of it, but create a movement to give it more oomph, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to say this one thing. You don't always need a movement Do you understand? To catapult an artist or aspire an artist, there are too many artists who work in spite of a movement.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you understand? They work from the movement in their own psyche, in their own imagination. And in the aftermath, you might want to attach them or assign them into an era or genre of a movement.
Yeah.
But basically, artists continue to work regardless.
Yeah, they create.
They're creative, yeah, constantly. Yeah.
Well, I think that's been a constant battle in definition between art and politics, art and the political movement. There's been a constant war that's always gone on, I think, in human history. You know,
what I'm thinking about, this is taking me back to the kids. And while we had talked about, you know, the exposure is important, but what I also think is so important is what Leslie just articulated is how do we allow kids to be able to create and to be able to experience the power of their creative and imaginative abilities to manifest what's in their minds as an artist does.
Yes.
And, you know, that can be art. It can be engineering. I mean, it can be. But what it is that power to create, and that confidence in the inner vision. And boy, you know, if we had an education system that could do that, we would.
If we had an education system to do that, then we would be about empowerment. We would be about empowering our next generations.
Yeah.
Do you understand? We would, and that empowerment would lead to self-esteem. That empowerment would lead to collaborations and partnerships and alliances and breaking down these silos around which we find ourselves contained, locked, suppressed, and dominated. And it's because we're not focusing on the children.
I was just jumping in because we're losing all of our callers. They've been waiting for us to let them in. We've got to let them in. We're down to one. So if you can come in at 410-391-8888. Chris, you're on the air. Chris from Randallstown. Chris, you're on the air?
Yeah. Good afternoon. I don't have to agree with Darren. Let's take a look at the Black Arts Movement of the 1960s. How, you know, this segment population within the African-American community created the Black Arts Movement out of the Civil Rights Movement, out of the Black Power Movement. Mm-hmm. How do you see that? Put that in context. And that'll be it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
Look, that was one of the most sterling movements in history because it did more than just amplify the politics of the moment, which was the civil rights, which was the sit-ins, the strikes. It was a way for artists to take their imagery and ally it with the democratic ideals of this country. But the other thing that it did was it was absolutely a powerful catalyst for so many different kinds of imaginations to come forward. Writers were inspired. Poets were inspired. Dancers were inspired. Theater was inspired. Every media, every kind of expressive form was drawn into this movement. And yes, it was the pulse of the moment, and the artists were able to reflect that. But what we're trying to say is that a pulse, a human being, a world is about 365 degrees.
Yeah.
You understand? It's a full spectrum. And we have so many more levels, not ever discounting the political, that we must achieve in order to maintain and to look at the quality of life that we are seeking to establish in all cities, in all communities, in all states, and across the borders into other countries. Because now that we have access to the technology and the internet, we are talking with people around the world within the same 30 seconds. And our children are having access to these resources and tools. And there is so much imagination that we have yet to seed and cultivate and then hopefully harvest and then channel into productive units so that we can see positive outcomes. Because that's what we're looking at. We're looking at positive outcomes. We're looking at the possibility of impossibility, things that we had not even dreamed of happening. And so it's very difficult to just look at the arts within the political context because sometimes it's just about the rapture of the emotional moment.
I think that the question, we've ranged a lot in this hour, and the question about art and politics is, I mean, the artists are always on the cutting edge of any political movement because they fuel it and push it for the art and inspires a lot of artists.
Right.
And because of the general rebellious nature of so many artists – wanting to be, to live and think the way they want to live and think and create what they want to create and think, that makes their work almost political all the time because it's challenging what's in front of us, mm-hmm. which is what art is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we always say theater is a mirror, art is a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That challenges. I think that would be something that we have to watch. We have to come back to our kids and get things moving again in schools that allow children to start developing their art. Everybody needs their art.
Yeah.
I'll be supposed to put that on the edge. That we
right.
all need our art on some level, whatever that art happens to be, whether it's playing a musical instrument or whether it's being in the theater or with writing or sculpting or whatever it is that pulls you out of just this.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lost that here.
Mm-hmm.
I think also what artists do is simply describe what is. And that in itself can be very political. And I'm thinking about a film that we showed at the Creative Alliance by an Iraqi refugee. And it's called, I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately. But so it was a film that he made while he was still in Baghdad before he was resettled by the Baltimore
yeah.
Resettlement Center.
Right, right.
And it was one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever seen because here we are in Baghdad and here we are in the life of people there in the midst of the chaos that has been wrought upon them. And these are people like us. These are artists. These are shop owners. These are students, mothers. And I'm not sure that one would have the opportunity to see something like that other than through the work of an artist, through the work of that artist. And it was truly an honor to be able to share it. We do have a lot of refugees in this town. So the politics is international in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just about out of time here. And there are a lot of Iraqi artists in this town. Amazing number of Iraqi artists in this town.
Wow.
We've
right.
had on the show, and they're just. So we're going to come back to this and kind of push it even more. And I think that maybe we should have a discussion with some of our leaders about what is important here in terms of how yeah. what we put in our mm-hmm. schools and what we want to develop and what we want to push, what city we can, become. First, I want to thank my dear colleague and friend Anthony McCarthy for joining us on Monday once again.
Great to be here. Always
happy, brother. Dr. Lester Spence. We know we'll be in Baltimore now for some time to come.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It's a good look, man. It's really
good. I love it. Tenure looks good on you, son. Looks
yeah.
good. Dr. Leslie King Hammond, always a pleasure to have you. Great Star Studios.
A joy. Thank you.
And Margaret Footner, you too. You should come more often.
Thank you.
Always good to have you here. As we're on the way out of here, I want to remind you Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents in arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. And let you know the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy, Bobby Holmes, just coming in to join us. He's across the glass right now. I can see him. And Mark Gunnery. And Cricket Aronson, who's been with us for almost 3 years, is leaving to – this is her last week. She won a Fulbright. She's off to Germany to study, to take her art and her work there for a year. And we're just so proud of her and happy that she's gone. We're going to really miss her. Always have a place for her when she returns. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto, who does an able job there. We have to have her here as well. Our intern today is Alexis Seth. She joins us here, works full-time, and comes to work with us two nights a week. It's always good to have her in the studio. Engineered by Regis Tucker, and introducing Andre Melton, who is studying to work on the boards. He'll be working with us on the boards here at WEAA. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, find out about our guests and what they work, they do, please visit us at our website at steinershow.org. Stay tuned now for Marsha Reeves News. It's coming up. Keep it moving. She'll be here in just a moment, jumping into the studio, shoving us out of the way, as she likes to do. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.